Thanks, Charlie. See, she got it.
Okay. All right, okay.
Dr. Love has reserved room 1062 physiology room for the rest of the quarter for us to do videos. So today we're going to pick up where we left off last week, following the kidneys down and move into the pelvic region. So we'll have that on. And Vasali's going to be in there helping set it up. We'll wrap it up. There's a couple other things going on at lunch today. There's the tea with Dean Raskins, which that is in room 186. And then there's also, for anyone who's interested in legislation, going to DC Fly and all of that, and whatnot. There's a cobalt meeting also going on. So there's a lot of activities, but we will be showing the video, and we'll be previewing for tomorrow's day section. I hope. I haven't actually looked at the video.
But you know what? This is what, how many years ago? 2003, 4 years. This is what they were doing, because I announced to them, I'm going to give them the final exam in June as USMLE. So, yes, I have administered USMLE. USMLE, United States Medical Licensing Exam. Okay, and just to prove it to the rest of the world that the past year students are very well prepared in anatomy. So, anyway, the dean of those students, those days, came up with the money to buy the exam. So, the students got together and they used to study like that. First year, I only gave one quarter, the spring quarter I announced. Second year, I gave them the whole 3 quarters because I knew at the time I would get it. So, they used to study like this. So it reminded me of what you guys are doing. Anyways, so that's beside the point. Let's move on to the inguinal canal and the descent of the testes and ovaries. And so as we come to where are we now, you know that we have done the anterior abdominal wall and gone right through to the posterior abdominal wall. Now we are getting ready to go into the pelvis and perineum. So after the descent of the testes and the formation of the inguinal canal, we will go and look at, you know, the pelvis. If we have time, you know, today we will go to the pelvis. If not, we will do it and the urinary bladder. That's how we go. Pelvis, that means the viscera in the pelvis. That means the urinary bladder. That means the internal, you know, genitalia of both the genders. You know, and then we come to the perineum or the external genitalia. So that's the order in which we are going. Now, first of all, on the outline here, it says the formation of the inguinal canal. As you look at the formation of the inguinal canal, you know a lot of what you call general points about the inguinal canal, don't you? What do you know about it? It's an obliquely located canal. As you look on the diagram here, the same diagram that you have, you know, up there. So here we also have the diagram that also shows you the inguinal canal here, and then let's look at how all these layers come to give covering to these, or all these abdominal layers come to the scrotum. And why do we have this, that, all kinds of things in different places? As best as I can, I'll, you know, take you through those, because I know some of you don't have embryology, so that's why I'll take you through some of the things here. Now, when you look at it here, so this is the inside of the abdomen right here. So here you have the perineum. Here's the perineum. Now, then you have extra, on the extraperitoneal fat. You may remember that. Extraperitoneal fat here. And then when you come to the outside, you have in purple color, you have the transverse iris alignment. This here, the transverse iris fascia. That's the transverse iris fascia. So just reviewing a little bit of the layers of the abdomen, because then you know you when we come to do the formation, you will know. Then external to that, you have in blue color, you have the transversus abdominis muscle. So here is a blue muscle, right here, blue muscle is the transversus abdominis, transversus, okay, S-U-S, transversus abdominis muscle. So here you have that. Come external to that, of course, what do you have? Transversus abdominis, and what do you have then? What do you have then? Internal oblique. So here you have the internal oblique muscle. And of course then here on the extreme, on the outside here you have the external oblique. Okay? Now, this is the aponeurosis of the external oblique. And then here you see the, what you call your superficial inguinal ring. You can have that superficial inguinal ring as a ring here. And then here you have the deep inguinal ring. Okay. Here we have the deep inguinal ring. Alright, so here are the two rings. And in between these two rings you have, let me see the color I haven't used. Yeah, green I haven't used. So here is the tube. So here you have the canal in green. Okay, so here you have, the canal is going right over here, and you can see it is dotted because of the things here. So now you have between the two rings, the superficial and the deep inguinal rings, you have, you know, the obliquely located inguinal canal. Now how is it formed? Because when we look at the scrotal sac here, so all these layers are here, so that means you know which diagram to follow when you go home and when you're looking at it. So here, how do these layers, all the layers of the abdomen, as you look here, here you have the scrotal sac, and you can see all the layers here. You have the skin, superficial fascia, you have the premastic muscle, and you have the external oblique aponeurosis that gives the external spermatic fascia, and so this is the internal oblique. And so all the layers of the abdomen are represented here, you know, in the scrotal sac. And so how is it coming there? Now, so that means when I look at the outline, how is the inguinal canal formed? The inguinal canal, I compare the formation of the inguinal canal to a swimmer, a person who is standing on the side of the pool, you know, planning to go in, looking to see when he or she should jump in. Okay? And so, what's happening here for the formation of the inguinal canal? Here you have the processus vaginalis. So here you have, this is the swimmer with the processus vaginalis now going and hitting the water, forming kind of a depression. So the processus vaginalis, that is this here, that means the diverticulum of the peritoneum is coming, that the peritoneum you have seen, you know, is here, okay? The peritoneum you have seen is here. So that peritoneum, you know, forms a finger-like projection called the processus vaginalis. So here is the peritoneum, diverticulum, the processus vaginalis coming and hitting the transversalis, L-I-S fascia. and so it has to make an opening. That is the deep brain. Then it still sees. So the processes by the analysis has come, and now it is surrounded by, because it hit the transversalis fascia, it is surrounded by the transversalis fascia, internal, you know, spermatic layer or something along there. And then it continues. When it continues, it still sees more water. Pushes the transversus abdominis to the side, then still sees the internal oblique, push it to the side here. God, still you have to go, comes up to the surface, but the external oblique upper neurosis is very formidable. Gives it the last push and makes an opening. That opening is your external. That opening is your external or the superficial inguinal ring. So now that canal is formed. That canal is formed by the processus vaginalis, which is a finger-like projection, an outpouching diverticulum of the peritoneum. Now the way is already, you know, paved, so you have the canal. Now the canal is formed, but the same time what's going on, when the canal is formed, you have to have, when you look at what goes on here, I'll take you through the outline after you get the gist of this here. Now here, when you look at it, when the canal is formed, here you can see the let's put this one here. So you can see the peritoneum is here. This is the diverticulum. Pardon me?
Is there a coloring packet with all of this?
I have given you guys. Not. Oh, okay, wait. Oh, yes, I'm sorry. Here. Okay. Okay, so isn't that a nice way of figuring out how the inguinal canal is formed? And as long as you practice medicine, unless you develop Alzheimer's, which I hope not, you will remember it. You will not forget. Please pass it. You don't need to. Okay, and so what's happening is there's more than one. It's very thin, so please pass it. And so here, there are two there. And at about the same time, what's happening is here, the testes and the ovaries, were developing in the lumbar region. Two there, high up in the lumbar region. And are they retroperitoneal or are they in the peritoneal cavity? The developing gonads are retroperitoneal or intraperitoneal, or how are they? What is their relationship to the peritoneum? What is the relationship, embryology? What is the relationship of the gonads, developing gonads? I have extras. Anybody? Okay, good. What is the relationship to the peritoneum? Come on. Retro. Exactly. Sorry.
Thank you.
No, you only need one. It's first I need for people who are here in class to get it. And then those who are absent later. Okay. So we have retroperitoneum, high up in the lumbar region, okay? Just below the kidneys, both genders, that is where they are developing, okay? And as they are developing, what happens is there is ligament, fibrous ligament. You all have one? Everybody? Now you want to chew. Alright, good. So, there is what is called gubernaculum. Gubernaculum is a fibrous ligament. The gubernaculum knows where the gonads are going to go. So, they are lying await there, you know, to go where they want to drag them, where they want them to go. So, what you're seeing here is the developing gonad right here. Okay, so this is the peritoneum in red color. So retroperitoneally, in green color, you have the testes, or you know the developing gonad. And so here, in purple color, here you have the gubernaculum. Gubernaculum means cell ligament. Gubernaculum. It exists in both gubernaculum, in the male and the female. In the male, you will call it gubernaculum testis. Okay, in the female, just gubernaculum, and the female. And so what's happening is the gubernaculum, one end of the gubernaculum is attached to the distal pole of the developing gonad. And then the other end, you know, is, you know, coming down and attaching itself to the genital swelling. So here it comes down, it attaches to the genital swelling. In the male, that is the future scrotal sac. So here is the genital swelling. In the female, that is the labia majora. Now, as the inguinal canal is being developed, the gubernaculum is pointing to the anterior-abdominal wall. When you will read that, it's pointing to the anterior-abdominal wall, to the future site of your deep inguinal ring. So it's pointing there, okay? And then after pointing, its other end is already, you know, attached to the genital swelling, which is the future, either the labia majus or the scrotal sac, okay? Now, when the canal is formed by this diverticulum, you know, that has already done the swimming and has made, then what happens is, then this, you know, decides that it has to come into the inguinal, you know, inguinal canal. Okay. Now there's another thing also. In the male we have the spermatic cord, and in the female, you know, the round ligament of the uterus. They're not analogous. Their function is not the same. And so from the upper part right here, you also have from the extraperitoneal tissue, you also have, you know, the what is called your the ductus deferens, or ductus deferens here. Ductus deferens. It's a little, not little in the adults. Ductus deferens is a muscular tube. Ductus deferens is a muscular tube that extends from the testes in the scrotum, you know, to the seminal vesicles, the ductus deferens. The ductus deferens delivers the sperm cells, you know, to the seminal vesicles, which we will be studying, you know, later. So the ductus deferens also travels, the ductus deferens from the region travels down. And at the same time, the gubernaculum, you know, doesn't want, you know, to be left behind. I mean, the testes You know, it's in one we left behind, the vernaculum drags the testes down or the ovaries down from the lumbar region. From the lumbar region. Okay? Now what happens is in the male, there's nothing holding it back. So the vernaculum is able to drag, you know, the testes down into the genital swelling down here. Okay? First it comes and snoops around, it sees it's a comfortable place, so I can drag it down into the genital swelling. So it brings it down, and you can see it takes a while, finally it brings it down right here. Okay? And once it drags it down into the genital swelling, right here, the vernaculum kind of degenerates. It has done its purpose. It doesn't have to be there. So it degenerates. And at the same time, when this was happening, the processus vaginalis that has already paved the way, you know, has, when it was pushing, remember it was pushing the transversus abdominis muscle, the oblique, the what is called the internal oblique muscle, the external oblique muscle, and so it was pushing, but right along with it brings a part of all of these layers right along with it in through the inguinal canal, in through the inguinal canal. And so those layers come through the inguinal canal, come to the scrotal sac, into the genital swelling, into the genital swelling. And then when it has come there, you have all these layers here that we will go over sometime. And then what happens to, normally, what happens to the, this one here, the processus vaginalis, that is here, this one here, processus vaginalis. That's the same name for both, male and female. Processus vaginalis is a diverticulum of the peritoneum found in both genders. Okay? Processus vaginalis. And that processus vaginalis, you can follow it. See here? This is how it is, you know, coming down, how it is coming down further and further, bringing along with it all the layers of the anterior abdominal wall. It's coming down further, right along development, right along development comes, and then it sees when it comes about 32nd week, I believe, about 32nd week, I believe, you know, it will be in the, what do you call, in the scrotal sac, okay? So it comes here and it sees the male gonad sitting right here in the genital swelling or the scrotal sac, and it goes to surround it. It surrounds it, and as it is surrounding here, see, these are the two layers of the processus vaginalis, okay? And so as it surrounds it there, then it just, you know, degenerates after birth, you know, it's stuck. That is connecting it, you know, to the peritoneal lining of the abdominal cavity, and it still, it was connected, but when it has come into the scrotal sac, at some point after birth, it degenerates. That means the processus vaginalis, that means the stalk. Here is the stalk. The stalk of the processus vaginalis normally, under normal conditions, it degenerates, and then it gives just a covering, a two-layered peritoneal covering to the testes in the scrotal sac. Those two-layered peritoneum in the scrotal sac surrounding the testes is what you call the tunica vaginalis. Tunica vaginalis. Tunica vaginalis. Even though it is in the male genital swelling or the scrotum, this covering, double-layered peritoneal covering of the testes is still called and always referred to as the tunica vaginalis. So tunica vaginalis is a double-layered serous membrane because it's peritoneum, so double layers. So there's a space there, there's a cavity there, just like your pleural fluid and your, you know, pericardial cavity and all that. And so there's continually a little bit of fluid, you know, generated. And then you can see the stalk of the processus vaginalis has degenerated, so it stays up like that. So it has no, normally it should not have any communication. So as you can, this one shows, okay, but if it has communications, we will be going over, some of the clinical, you know, conditions. So now you have kind of a bigger picture, the big picture of what's happening, you know, in the formation of the, what you call the inguinal canal, and how the developing gonads in the male, you know, infant comes down from the high up lumbar region below the kidneys, retroperitoneal, how it slips right down, takes a long while for it to slip right down. 28 weeks it is, you know, someplace, and 32 weeks it is, you know, right in the genital swelling, and so it rides down there. Okay, so that's normal process for the male infants, you know, gonad to come down. But that gonad can be stuck someplace else. We'll go there with the clinical, you know, conditions. And then what happens to the female? The female, the same thing is happening. Then I'll follow the outline, okay? The female, the same thing is happening. You have the processus vaginalis, you have the gubernaculum of the female. The gubernaculum is attached. The thing in the female is that the gubernaculum is attached to two things. Not only just the developing female gonad, but also to the primordial uterus. The primordial uterus. So when you look at the uterus here, the female, in the female that is up here, okay. The female, okay, the in the female what's happening is the gubernaculum is attached to one pole, one end of the ovary here, that is the gubernaculum. That gubernaculum was attached to the uterus, the primordial uterus, the developing uterus, okay? And because of its attachment to the primordial uterus, when the gubernaculum of the female tries to drag, you know, the developing gonad in this region, in the lumbar region below the kidneys, it would only come down into the true pelvis. It will only come down to the true pelvis. It does not go to the inguinal canal. It does not go to the inguinal region. It only goes into the true pelvis. That means to the lateral walls, right about here. True pelvis means below this blue line. Below this blue line, you have the true pelvis. What you see as the orange indicates all over here, okay? The orange indicates the true pelvis. So your ovaries should be about someplace here or someplace here, okay? So to the lateral walls of the true pelvis. Of the true pelvis is where you would have the ovaries coming. Because the uterus holds it, the uterus says, hey, you know, I have to be near you. You can't just take off. You can't go right into the labia majus. You know, you will die there. So I don't want you going there. I want you to stay close to me. The uterus, of course, already, you know, ready to take care of whatever is coming there. So the uterus says, no, you can't go. So the gubernaculum, what it does is, the gubernaculum decides to divide. The gubernaculum decides to divide. Upper part of the gubernaculum stays as what is called the ligament of the ovary. Ligament of the ovary. So part of the gubernaculum continues to stay, and that is the ligament of the ovary. The other part of the gubernaculum, you know, is right here, that continues, that forms the round ligament of the uterus, the round ligament of the uterus. So in a female specimen, when you look, the ovarian ligament and the round ligament of the uterus actually take origin from just about the same place where the female gubernaculum was attached. Where the female gubernaculum was attached to the uterus. Okay? So the round ligament makes its attempt and it comes. The round ligament sees the because the in the female, you know, infant also, the gubernaculum was pointing to the anterior-abdominal wall where it was going to be the future deep inguinal ring. Okay? And so therefore, it has a reason for the gubernaculum, has a reason to come. That means the round ligament of the uterus that is developed from that gubernaculum to come and look for the deep inguinal ring. Finds it, sneaks into the deep inguinal ring and comes right along. But it doesn't bring all the layers, of the anterior-abdominal wall. It doesn't have to, because in the female, the labia majus has its own structure. So it doesn't need all the layers from the anterior-abdominal wall. So it comes and it goes into the labia majus, around the ligament of the uterus, on the right and left. They come through the inguinal canal and they pass through the go to the perineum and they insert in the superficial tissue of the labia majus. So you have the round ligament and it has some of the layers surrounding it, but not like for the labia majus. Okay? And therefore, the inguinal canal of the female infant and the female, you know, adult is narrower. It's narrower because all these layers are not coming down because there is no spermatic cord and, you know, with all its, you know, layers and everything, this is a skinny little round ligament coming down. Therefore, when you look at the occurrences of inguinal hernias, femoral hernias, you know, inguinal hernias are more, you know, often occurring in males. Inguinal hernias are more a frequent occurrence in the males because of the wide inguinal canal and, you know, the spermatic cord there, but still, you know, the hernia can push its way, you know, through there. So in females, it's fewer, you know, occurrence is fewer, you know, it's not, you know, that, you know, common, okay? Now, let me go to the outline and take you through all the things that I have to go through. Yes. Labia majus. In the male, the statement is, you know, there's some clarity, you know. Here you want some clarity in terms of how is that, you know, the round ligament of the uterus doesn't bring all the abdominal layers. It is surrounded by, you know, a number of layers. You will see, when you dissect, you will see there are some, you know, fatty kind of tissue and some membranes there, but it is not just like all the layers that you will find in the scrotal sac. and that is, you know, surrounding, you know, the spermatic cord. It is forming in, when it is formed, okay, when it is formed, you know, by the processus vaginalis, you know, you have already the pavement, I mean, already you paved to the left and to the right, okay, and those blades that are, you know, supposed to be continuing on and surrounding is not, is surrounding the, what you call the round ligament, but not into the labial majors. It doesn't come to the labial majors. No, it doesn't. Yeah, yes?
I have a question on the lower right hand picture.
Okay, wait, okay, you're fading for me, yes.
So on the lower right hand, there's the red part that you colored in with the process of vaginalis.
Is
that on the right hand side, is that a pouch or is just an arrow showing
that? This one?
To the right.
Yeah. This one, that is a pouch, meaning it is a double layered, what do you call, yeah, it is a double layered, no, it's not on the posterior aspect. It comes, it doesn't surround the posterior aspect. The reason is, you heard Emily's question? Did you hear Emily's question? Yeah, okay, good. You all have, you're all younger than me, so you all have very good hearing. And so right here, what is called your, this one, the tunica. This is the tunica vaginalis, okay? The red thing that you're referring to. This one here. Emily, this one. That's the tunica vaginalis, okay? The tunica vaginalis comes like that, okay? And it doesn't cover the posterior and the part. Posterior part, a small area of the posterior part is not covering because right over here we have the epididymis. The epididymis is sticking right on to the testes. That means there's physical connection when you look at the epididymis. So therefore, the tunica, oh good, okay. And the tunica vaginalis cannot come and completely surround it. It doesn't completely surround it, okay? So it is just sitting like that, enveloping most of it, but not all of the, see here, all of the testes right here. See here, because superiorly and posteriorly, you have the epididymis. The head of the epididymis is sitting right over there. So that tunica vaginalis, you see right here? Tunica vaginalis is coming and covering like that, a small area where, you know, the epididymis, head of the epididymis is sitting, it doesn't cover. It can't. The reason is, if you remember, you may not remember, from histology, you have the ductus, what do you call, ductuli, rete testes, do you remember? Yeah. Oh, good. Some people remember. Rete testes and the ductuli, they are, you know, going into and, you know, forming your head of the epididymis, okay? So that is physically coming as part of the testes, okay? So therefore, if this doesn't, the tunica vaginalis doesn't go all the way to this region, but it envelopes like that, okay? And so that is an important structure, though, for a physician to keep in mind, the double layers of the tunica vaginalis, because there's room there, a space there, and there is little serous fluid there, secreted by the peritoneum, because it's peritoneum, okay? And so you can have, it normally allows, you know, the testes to move, but it can also give you problems. Hydroseal, varicoseal is a different thing, but hydroseal, you know, that is, you know, or hematoseal, any of those things, fluid can accumulate this place. Now, I'd like to take you through, I gave you the big picture, now I'd like to take you through the outline so you don't miss out on, you know, anything that you're supposed to get, you know, on using the outline. So let's go here with the outline and here, right here. formation of the inguinal canal. Okay, inguinal canal, then I'll point to location, structure, contents. When we look at the contents of the inguinal canal in both genders, male and female, what do you have? There's one nerve that you will find in the inguinal canal. Okay, now you have to differentiate. When you're listening here very intently, sometimes you may miss something. Inguinal canal, the contents of the inguinal canal and the contents of the spermatic cord are different. Okay? So when you look at the inguinal canal, in the male you have the spermatic cord. In the female you have the round ligament of the uterus. And in both genders, ilioinguinal nerve. In both genders, you have the ilioinguinal nerve. And then we will go and look at the contents of the spermatic cord. Contents of the, normally, what do you find in the spermatic cord? You find the ductus deferens, and as you, can you all see that, you know, there? The ductus deferens, can you see that? Ductus deferens. Or duct of the epididymis. Instead of that, I just say ductus deferens. Okay, ductus deferens and three arteries. Do you need to know the names of these three arteries? Yes. You need to know the three arteries here. The three arteries are right here. We have the artery to the ductus deferens. So here we have the three arteries, okay? Artery to the ductus deferens, okay? And then we have the testicular artery and from where is the testicular artery coming? What is the testicular artery a branch of? Up the abdominal aorta, and then we have the cremastric artery. So that is the third is the cremastric artery is coming from the inferior epigastric. Inferior epigastric artery and artery to the ductus deferens. That is coming from the inferior vesicle. So it is from three sources, but there are three arteries, and you can see those three arteries. When you have you dissected a genital branch of the, and also there is a, so that's all the three arteries. Have you dissected the spermatic cord and, no, you have it, okay. All right, so by the time you come there, you will have those. And then nerves. The nerve that is in the spermatic cord is the, your favorite genital branch of the genitofemoral nerve. I say your favorite because a lot of you are writing down the function of the genitofemoral nerve in place of the lateral femoral cutaneous nerve. A lot of you are, you know, writing down the function of the genitofemoral, so I figured you mistook, you know, the lateral femoral cutaneous to genitofemoral. Genitofemoral, I'm sorry I'm not jumping around, but I'd just like to spend one word on that. That is, number one is lying right on the psoas major muscle. It's coming right through the psoas major muscle by itself. And number two, it branches. Right, lying right on the psoas major muscle, genitofemoral branches. Okay? And that one goes to the genitalia and the other goes to the, you know, to the cutaneous innervation to the femoral region. Okay? So that is why, that's how you figure out genitofemoral. Very easy, okay? And so, genitofemoral nerve, lymph vessels traveling with the veins, but most importantly also, this one here, pampiniform. Look at that. Pampiniform plexus of veins. Pampiniform plexus of veins. Pampiniform. So veins here, what you see here is P-A-M. Pampiniform plexus of veins. So what you saw in as contents of the spermatic cord, you did not see this testicular vein, did you? You saw the pampiniform plexus of veins. But you saw the testicular artery in the spermatic cord. So where is the testicular vein? Where is the testicular vein? When all these, this pampiniform plexus surrounds here and it goes, when it goes up to the deep ring, deep inguinal ring, there is where from this plexus you have one testicular vein. That is, at the deep inguinal ring is where you have the testicular vein. So the testicular vein is not in the spermatic cord. The testicular artery is in the spermatic cord. Okay. The female also has this, what you call, the pampiniform plexus, you know, when we do the internal genitalia, you know, around the uterus, someplace there, you know, in the broad ligament, we have the pampiniform plexus of veins for the females as well. And what else are lymph vessels and nerves? And so that's about, you know, the contents of the spermatic cord. Is that clear? Anything you want me to, before I move on to, you know, something else? Okay, that is the... Now, this end of the testes, right here, okay, contents, this end of the testes. Now, processus vaginalis, you know what is processus vaginalis? What is it? A diverticulum or an outpouching or a finger-like projection of the peritoneum, Tunica vaginalis? Tunica vaginalis is that, part of the processus vaginalis that has come into the scrotal sac, and it almost surrounds the testes. And so that's the tunica vaginalis, and it has two, you know, layers. It has a visceral layer and a parietal layer. And in your coloring packet, you have that diagram. Let me see the diagram here. Yes, this diagram is a good one to show that the two layers, because I need you to understand that there are two layers, and also between those two layers where you can have accumulation of fluid in there. So I don't seem to have the same, transparency that is clear, but on that diagram, please, you know, take a look. Oh, I have this diagram, which you also have. Let's put this one on, so I don't want to disappoint you. So on this one, you can see, this one also is in your color packet, and this I normally use for the layers of the scrotum. Use it for this one here, and so here you have, okay, red will stand out, okay, so let me do this here. This is the visceral layer. The visceral layer should not surround the entire, but that's the visceral layer, and so this here is the parietal layer. Comes right up to there, okay? And so in between is the space here. The space, as you look at it here, in between here is the space. That space is the likely place if somebody has hydrocele. of excess fluid, okay? And so that is the tunica vaginalis. And then we have gubernaculum testis is the fibrous ligament that is dragging, you know, the developing gonads down to their adult places. In the male, it is to the testes, the scrotal sac. In the female, it is to the true pelvis, you know, to the lateral walls of the pelvis. And then, gubernaculum testes, there's tunica albuginea. I have included the tunica albuginea here. Okay, tunica albuginea. Let me include, I have it someplace else, but let me include the tunica albuginea here. Right next to the gubernaculum testes, tunica. Tunica albuginea. Tunica albuginea. Tunica albuginea. Where would you expect to see that? And what is it? Tunica albuginea. Surrounding the testes. Tunica albuginea is a connective tissue membrane. Tunica albuginea is a connective tissue membrane. These are embryological terms, okay? Some of these are tunica albuginea. Tunica albuginea is right here in red color. I'm going to put the tunica albuginea surrounding the entire scrotal, meaning the testicular tissue. Here is the tunica albuginea is the layer that is next to the visceral layer of the tunica vaginalis. So if you cut through here, flip that membrane, on the inside of that membrane, the first layer on the inside of that membrane is your tunica vaginalis. Tunica albuginea is a connective tissue layer that holds and surrounds the entire, you know, tissue of the testes, of the tissue of the testes, you know. As you look at it, this is, you know, how when you take a cross-section, you may have to review histology for some of this, you know, understanding. And, you know, so here you have, say, this is your tunica albuginea, okay? And from this tunica albuginea, there will be other things, you know, there, you know, here you have all this tubular, you know, structure, you know, that is here. But it has, you know, connection going like that. This is, you know, it is a tubular structure right here. And then you have the cells sitting there, and, you know, cells in between here and everywhere. And then it is producing, you know, the sperm cells that are mature ones will come, you know, right in here. And from all over these places, then they can, you know, travel right into, through the head of the epididymis to the ductus deferens to the seminal vesicle. Okay, so this is your tunica albuginea here. Okay, and then because I see the look on some people's face, and then here you have the visceral layer of the tunica vaginalis. And then here you have the, let me see purple here. This is your parietal layer. Here of the tunica vaginalis. This is tunica vaginalis parietal layer. And this is also tunica vaginalis visceral layer. Okay? So that is the order in which you, I needed to understand. Okay, so that is tunica albuginea, tunica vaginalis with its two layers, the parietal and the visceral layers. Okay? And then what else is next on the outline? Various layers of the scrotum and the testes that you need to take a break. Alright, so okay, before we go to look at the layers, those layers will go quickly because you know I've already covered a lot of that. Testes and as you come to look at it here, okay, skin is skin, dactyls, okay, good, I have taken them to the lot I wanted them to have, okay, good, okay, here, there, all right, so here, we're going to be just doing the layers of the scrotum and the testes. I'm going to color it with you so I can move fast and move right along here. This diagram is a good one for that. Okay? And in this diagram here, we have all the layers here. Okay, then we have few things we're going to get. So layers of the scrotum and the testes. Okay, right here. Now, as we look at here, I don't want this to move. Okay. Okay, here. So all the colors now come out. Good. Yes. Blue and orange and red and everything here. Okay, good. Now, skin is the skin. As you see, the same skin. You guys are having fun. That's good. So the abdominal skin, as you can see, is coming right down here to the scrotum. Right here, that's the skin. Scrotal skin. Okay? And inside the skin, just as in the abdomen, you have the superficial fascia, remember? The superficial fascia has two layers of the abdomen, scarpa and the camber. Cambers and scarpa's fascia. So what happens to the fatty layer? That fatty layer is what we call the camber's fascia, remember? That fatty layer, when it comes into the scrotal sac, you know, along with the skin when it is coming, so you can follow it, you see here like that, okay, and it converts, the fat, you know, converts into smooth muscle cells, those smooth muscle cells here is what we call dactose muscle, these are smooth muscle cells. So that means the camber fascia, the superficial fascia, part of the superficial fascia that you see here, is changed into smooth muscle. That is why, so we have smooth muscle cells in the wall of the scrotal sac. That's why it has, the scrotal sac has the rugose appearance, you know, because of the smooth muscle cells being there. And smooth muscle cells, what do the muscle cells do? What is their function? Contract, you know, they contract, and so it contracts, you know, in cold weather and whatnot, and so there you have the rugose appearance of the scrotal sac, and then next to that, so you will have what is called the dactyls muscle, is the converted fat to smooth muscle cells, and then you have the dactyls fascia. The dactyls fascia is the scarpas, you know, the scarpas fascia that we have here, and so that is your dactyls fascia. So dactyls muscle and fascia, both with the superficial fascia of the abdomen. Then deep to the superficial fascia. Here is the external oblique, you know, muscle, that means the external oblique aponeurosis right here. External oblique, I'm going to put in blue color here. That's the external oblique. External oblique aponeurosis coming here. And when it comes here, surrounding the testes, that means in the scrotal sac, is the external spermatic fascia. External spermatic fascia. Okay? And then we have, in green color, we have the internal, or the cremastric, not internal yet, cremastric fascia and cremastric muscle fibers. So here, what is this one here? This is external, this is fascia, this is external, so this is, what is this green color here? Internal oblique, you know, muscle of the abdomen. So it's fascia coming down here into the scrotal sac, and it forms your, you know, the cremastric fascia and the cremastric muscle. The cremastric fascia and the cremastric muscle. As you look at this one here, you can really see there are a few muscle fibers here, surrounding here. So here you have the cremastic fascia and the cremastic muscle. The same thing, like the ductus muscle, you know, the cremastic muscle can also contract. Like in inclement weather, like in very cold weather, you know, the cremastic muscle can contract and it can, you know, take the testes to a more comfortable and warm place. So that is nature's way of making sure that the sperm cells do not die away, and so we have a plenty supply of it. And so to make sure the cremastic muscle is in the scrotal sac and it can contract, okay? And so that is the cremastic muscle and fascia, that means the derivative of your internal oblique aponeurosis. And then we have the internal spermatic fascia in purple color, because I haven't used that color yet. So in purple color, internal spermatic fascia, that is here. What do you think is the internal spermatic fascia is made of, or continuation of? The transversalis gallus. Internal spermatic fascia is your transversalis. Oh, that is the transversalis, you know, fascia. Transversalis fascia. And then, of course, internal to that, we have, remember, the tunica vaginalis here in red color, parietal layer, and the tunica vaginalis visceral layer, and deep to the visceral layer of the tunica vaginalis, what do you have? What do you have? Right on the scrotum. Yeah, tunica albuginea. Tunica albuginea. Tunica albuginea. So right here, you like the name albuginea? Okay, so here you have the tunica. Embryology is interesting, isn't it, you guys? So there you have the tunica albuginea. Well, you know, it starts as something else, and you know, when you look at it, you know, after a few weeks, it's very different. I mean, look at the development of the kidneys, look at the development of the ovaries and the testes coming from the posterior, you know, wall of the lumbar region of the abdomen, ending up someplace else. Embryology is very interesting. And so then, let's move right here to the next thing in the outline, so I make sure that we cover everything that I'm supposed to cover. Yes. Jet wave, yes. Yeah, the question was, is the ductus muscle and fascia continuation of the superficial fascia of the abdomen? Remember, the superficial fascia has two. layers. The counter, fat. Fat is, fat cells are converting into smooth muscle cells. Okay, and the membranous layer of the superficial fascia stays, continues as the fascia, as the Douglas fascia. So you have that fascia onto which, you know, these muscle cells can sit. Okay, so that's what you have. And, yes?
And what is the external chromatic fascia continuation of?
Epidurosis of. The question was the, what's the external chromatic fascia continuation of the epidurosis of the external oblique muscle of the abdomen. Yeah. And so, and then we have here, what's the next thing? Your skin to tonica vaginalis, I've taken you through. Descent of the ovaries. Descent of the ovaries and the testes, both of them I have taken you through. And Hasselbalch. Okay, now. Hasselbalch. Okay, wait. Let me stop here. Do you have any questions on all the things that we have done so far, descent of the ovaries, is that clear to you? Is clear to you? Okay. So descent of the ovaries is clear, and what happens to the what's called your gubernaculum in the female? That doesn't happen in the male. What happens to the gubernaculum in the female that is not happening in the male? Divides into two, and those two, you know, parts become what? Round the ligament of the uterus, round ligament of, and the ovarian ligament. But you have to pay attention here. That's why I brought it back. You know why? Because there's also, we also have round ligaments in other places. Where is the other round ligament that you know of? In the liver. So when you, on an exam, when you, you know, say round ligament, you cannot blame the dissection lab people if they take half off, isn't it? Because we don't know if you know whether that's the liver or whether it's some other part of the body, you see? So therefore, you have to say round ligament of the uterus. Okay, here it is, the round ligament of the uterus, okay? Now, Hasselbalch, yes, Liat.
So the gubernaculum, it divides to the ligament of the ovary and the round ligament of the uterus?
Yes, and in the female.
And was it originally the ligament of the ovary, which just branches into a second?
The ligament of the ovary, and after that, what you said, I didn't hear.
So I guess I'm confused. Does it start off as the ligament of the ovary, and then it gives off another branch, which is the round ligament of the uterus? Or does it start off as like a common?
Did you all hear what Liat said?
Yes.
Yes or no?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, because your hearing is much better than mine. And so, as you say, it's the, from the same place. The, gubernaculum in the female is attached to one pole of the ovary. One pole of the ovary. Okay? The other part, you know, the other part goes around, but the thing is, it can't go in.
So,
what's happening is the other part means that upper part that is attached to the ovaries, from the same place you have the beginning of the round ligament of the uterus, from the same place of on the uterus. Because when you look at the uterus, it has a fundus on top, okay? And the fundus and then the body. So when where the fundus and the body are united, that is the place on one side of that. I'll draw it and show it to you. That is the place from where you have the round ligament of the uterus starting. Okay, it's not giving rise to anything else but just those two things. And, oh, I have the diagram there, but let me go over here and draw that here so you can really see how this is happening. Now, here as you see, okay, all my colors come handy right now. So here is the fundus of the uterus, okay? And so here you have the fallopian tube coming. Fallopian tube, or what is called your uterine tube. Okay, and then here is my version of the uterine body, okay? Not necessarily the... Okay, here. Okay, so here is the cervix. So from here to... No, here. From here to here is the body. Now, here in red color, you have, see, the place here, and you have the place here. The fallopian tube happens to be here, you know, because it has to have access to the cavity in the uterus, okay? So here you have, this is the round ligament of the uterus, and here is the ovarian ligament here. So both of them are coming from the same place, you know, at the uterus, because originally during the embryonic development itself, what's happening is the gubernaculum in the female is attached to both the primordial uterus, that means the developing uterus, and the one pole of the ovary. So it doesn't just come and attach in adult, you know, life or anything, or after birth or anything. It's attached during development itself. For some reason, after, you know, embryogenesis and this has happened, all everything has gotten, all the dough has gotten divided into different things. Remember your ectoderm, ectoderm, mesoderm. Okay, from that plate, you know, it goes and divides into different things already divided. And by the third month, that means the between 8th and the 12th week or so, it has already been decided whether you're going to be a male infant or a female infant. By the 12th week, you can already know what is the gender. Okay, so these things have already been, you know, imprinted, you know, for the developmental process. It has given you a better understanding?
Thank you.
Okay, yes, Emily,
so
wait.
The round ligament, that's an affiliate down towards...
Yeah, the round ligament comes down through the deep inguinal ring, through the inguinal canal, through the superficial ring, into the labia majus. In fact, when you go do the perineum and this lower part of the abdomen, I like you guys to dig and look for the round ligament of the uterus. And I like you to peel it and see. That means it will be like peeling the onion. When you feel the onion, when you peel an onion, what do you have?
Layers.
Do you have anything else? Skin, layers, and there's a little triangular thing. The same thing with the round ligament. You peel and you will see layers and layers and nothing else there. Okay, some of these layers you will find. Okay, Annie.
I was just going to ask what the functions of the ovarian ligament and the round ligament.
What the question is, what's the functions of the ovarian ligament and the round ligament? The round ligament anchors the uterus, you know, to the labia majus. Okay, so anchoring. And the ovarian ligament is holding, you know, connecting the ovaries, making sure that the ova do not fall too far from the tree. Okay, that means when the ova fall, they have to fall in the perineal cavity. Okay, so the ovaries are held close to the uterus because the fallopian tube is there. Okay, fallopian tube is there. That is the reason. Other than that, it is not doing anything else except there's another ligament connected with the ovaries will do that. That does some things, okay, that we haven't mentioned, that we will do when we do the internal genitalia. Okay, and so that is, I can then move on with the outline, you guys? Yes or no?
Yes.
Okay, so let's go find here Hasselbeck's triangle. Please make sure you know the name Hasselbeck's triangle or the inguinal triangle, because in second year, when someone else talks about the Hasselbeck's triangle or the inguinal triangle, I don't want you to get lost. I'd like you to know the difference between the inguinal triangle, where is it, what is the clinical significance, we are going to go over it soon, and where is the femoral triangle. Okay? Two places. As you look at this here, and let me orient you to the what is called your Hasselbeck. Bach. It's not Bach. It's Bach. Hassel is like John Sebastian Bach. Okay, the same spelling. Hasselbeck, Bach's triangle, or the inguinal triangle. So here is the rectus abdominis muscle, and so here is the deep inguinal ring. Okay. And so here is that little triangle here. So that is your Hasselbeck's triangle. Okay, so Hasselbeck's. And the inguinal, your femoral triangle is further down, you know, here, further down here. Okay, and the clinical significance, this is the location, Hasselbeck's triangle, for where you may be able to palpate direct and indirect inguinal hernias. We will go over the hernias pretty soon, but and femoral hernia will be a little bit further down around here. Where would you expect to see femoral hernia? Do you remember from the first quarter, the femoral sheath? Yeah, femoral canal, femoral sheath, remember the medial compartment. Okay, and then so location you've seen, and the boundaries also you've seen. Lateral to it, you have the inferior epigastric vessels. Okay? Medial to it, you have the rectus abdominis muscle. And inferior to it, you have the. What do you have inferior to it here? What do you have here? What's the inferior border? Inguinal ligament. Good. Inguinal ligament. Okay. Now, that brings me right to the hernias. I know you've heard some things about the hernias, and you know some things about the hernias, okay? What do you know about the hernias that I don't have to go over in class? What is a hernia? First of all, define a hernia for me.
Yes?
Normal opening.
Abnormal
opening. And then I hear protrusion of a. So I will put the opening and the protrusion and the structure here. I'll put all this together, okay? So a hernia is the protrusion, of an organ or part of an organ through the wall in which it is contained, okay? And so that is the... that is the definition. If I ask you on an exam, define a hernia. You see, now you have heard it. Would you remember it? Yeah, I see heads shaking. Yes, okay. And so then, direct inguinal hernia, indirect inguinal hernia. Very easy to figure out direct and indirect inguinal hernias. Okay. Direct inguinal hernia is coming right down directly. So here, in the coloring packet, I have included one of them here. So here you have the direct inguinal hernia. This one. Direct. I know you have heard about this someplace else, haven't you? In dissection lab? Yes, you have heard about it. I know you have heard about it. So you can tell me, what can herniate through here, and where is it occurring? which inguinal ring is it capturing? Okay, so right here. And so here is the scrotal sac. And so here you have the superficial inguinal ring. I'm going to draw that superficial inguinal ring is right here. Okay. And so right up here, then we have in purple color, so you can differentiate here, conjoined tendon. Here. Conjoined tendon means what? Do you remember?
Are we missing that? It's not in our coloring packet.
Oh, okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Do you want this diagram? How many people want this diagram?
Everyone.
Okay, I'll make it available. I'll make it available for you. Okay? And so what it is that that's my oversight. Okay, I thought it was there because this thing here, you know, when I saw this thing, I thought it's pretty close, and so I thought, you know, it is there. And so that is what is happening. Anyways, so when the conjoined tendon becomes weak, so let's go and see here the conjoined tendon right here. Okay, here. Here is the conjoined tendon. Remember the lower fibers of the internal oblique muscle or the internal oblique aponeurosis and the transversus abdominis muscle. See, external oblique, internal oblique, transversus abdominis muscles. Remember the lower border here, lower part here. And so this is the conjoined tendon. This is the superficial inguinal ring. And so if this conjoined tendon becomes weak and weakened with constant pressure, intra-abdominal pressure of the viscera, of fat, and anything and everything that is constantly, you know, compressing, you know, this part of the abdominal wall. To begin with, this part of the abdominal wall is naturally a weak part of the abdominal wall to begin with, okay? And so then constantly when this one is being pushed with all kinds of intra-abdominal pressure, the conjoined tendon can become weakened. And it can really happen. You can have a hernia. You have already said to me what is a hernia, okay? And so that can push and come right down a loop of the, usually a loop here, a loop of the intestine. What intestine is likely to come there? The small intestine. Yeah, because small intestine has about 6 feet, remember, all looped up like a plate of, you know, spaghetti, you know, thrown into the abdomen here. And so from there, here you can see how it's happening. See here? Remember the deep inguinal ring is an opening. Remember the swimmer came? And that was, you know, made the depression in the transversalis fascia. That was the deep inguinal ring. So here is the transversalis fascia, peritoneum, transversalis fascia, deep inguinal ring. See how you can see it is very easy for that loop of the intestine to come down, you know. And in the hernial sac, when somebody tells you, say a colleague of yours, a surgeon, you have sent a patient because that you could not reduce the hernia, so you sent that person, and the person says, oh, the hernial sac, I don't want to open the hernial sac, but I'm going to try to do this. So what would you understand when he or she means a hernial sac? What is the hernial sac? What is in front of the small intestinal loop? Peritoneum. So here you have the peritoneum coming right out. So this is a male because you can see the spermatic cord here. The spermatic cord is pushed to the side, squished, but the loop of the intestine can come down with the you know, with a loop of the peritoneum in front of it, the peritoneal sac, the hernia. So that is a direct inguinal hernia because it's not going through any route. It's coming right through, exceeding through through the superficial inguinal ring. Here it is, okay? Then we have another kind, indirect. So now you see, you know, what is direct, because it's not going through any place. It's coming directly through the superficial inguinal ring. Then we have an indirect inguinal hernia. Indirect inguinal hernia, the next is, you see here, the indirect inguinal hernia. The indirect inguinal hernia is very easy for you to understand because it is just following the descent of the testes. It's just following the descent of the testes, which is, what would you say is the route of the descent of the testes? The deep ring, inguinal canal, and the superficial ring. Superficial ring, okay, and so it's just that very easy for you to, you know, remember, you know, direct and indirect inguinal hernia, you know, how it is, you know, following which route and which is just coming, you know, directly. And then we have femoral hernias. We have already mentioned that the inguinal hernias, the frequent occurrence of the, yeah, okay. You have, but yeah. This one is indirect because it is going, you know, through the superficial, I mean, deep ring, inguinal canal, and superficial ring. Okay, I just was showing you how a loop can come right when the conduit tendon is weakened, but this is, you know, indirect because it's coming through all the entire way of, you know, the descent of the testes. Emily.
So the indirect is going through the canal, and then the direct is going through the both rings.
The direct doesn't go through both rings. The direct goes only through the superficial ring. The direct goes only through the superficial ring. Because what is weakened there is the conjoint tendon. So it can just, you know, the mouth of the, what do you call, the mouth of the hernia is in between the layers. That means, you know, the, what is the conjoint tendon, you know, where it is coming medially to attach, that the hernia is pushing right through there instead of going through the deep ring. It does not go in the direct inguinal hernia. The hernial sac does not go through the deep ring. Does not. Only indirect will go through both. Superficial ring, I mean deep ring, canal, and the superficial ring. Okay? And then femoral hernia. Well, yes?
I'm still confused because it would still have to go through all those layers.
Pardon?
It would still have to perforate all those layers.
I can't hear you because at home I told you I'm half dead. Not dead, half dead. Yes.
The hernia, I mean, the contents would still have to perforate through all the layers, just not through the ring itself. That's what makes it.
Yeah, but why is it direct? Because it's not going through the route of the descent of the testes.
It's just whether or not it follows about or just goes through.
Yes, it is just like you are in a helicopter dropping something right down. Right over onto your
house or something like that. Okay, direct
dropping. If you're not going through the airport and getting into the plane and coming or doing any of those things. Directly parachuting down through the what is called conjoint tendon, because it's weakened. Remember, you're forgetting perhaps some of the things. That is, this has been constant. 40 years of constant pressure, okay? Fat and fetus and food and everything together. Yeah, flatulence and food, flatulence, fetus, fat, all those things together, you have a very badly weakened conjoined tendon. That's what happens. Yes. Which is more common? The question is, which is more common, direct or indirect? Indirect is more common than direct. Okay? And femoral is, indirect is more common. What is more common than direct or indirect is the less common is the femoral. Is the femoral. Okay? So femoral hernia is coming out through where? The femoral ring, femoral canal, into the medial compartment of the what? Of the femoral sheath. Of the femoral sheath, right? Hydrocele, varicocele, hematocele. Where would you find the fluid accumulation in hydrocele? Between the two layers of the tunica, yeah, parietal and visceral layer of the tunica vaginalis, tunica vaginalis. What is varicocele? Varicosity of the pampiniform. Good for you there. Pampiniform plexus of veins. You see the pampiniform plexus of veins, and when you look at that here, do you know, as a physician, I like you to keep this in mind, I hope you will, and that is, if your patient has varicocele, it has a very different feel than any other varicosities. That means when you feel your patient's scrotal sac, it will feel like a bag of worms. So you can get a male ND to do it if you don't want to do it, but that's the feel of it, and so if you don't want that feel, don't do it, and you can get someone else to do it, and that means you can get refer your patient, you know, to for this examiner, and you say, I'm too finicky, you know, to feel this part or to complete this examination. And so then, so that is, what is a hematocele? What is a hematocele? Blood. But in case of the blood, normally, if somebody is asking you what is a hematocele, the blood accumulation is in the same place where you have the hydrocele, you know, in between the two layers of the parietal and the visceral layers of the tunica vaginalis. But if there is trauma and damage, the blood can accumulate extravasation, that means outside of the vessels anywhere. So if I ask you a question on a quiz, unless I specify that this is due to trauma, you will have to give me, you know, between the two layers. Somebody will write and say, but you said in class if the blood can accumulate any place in the scrotal sac. Yes, in case of trauma, if the blood vessels are really damaged, okay? Otherwise, it will be in the tunica vaginalis cavity. The cremastric reflex and abdominal reflex, okay? Cremastric reflex, since a whole lot of you answered, you know, the cremastric muscle innervation on dissection lab exam. What is cremastric reflex? Somebody also wrote cremastric reflex. I remember, you know, seeing those answers. What is cremastric reflex? So you cough and then you make the patient cough and the person will do what? The person will cough and the cremastic muscle will. You make the person cough, you're mixing two things, okay? You make the person cough for if there's any protrusion of the hernia. perineal sac. That is what we should make them cough, but when you put your fingers there and feel it, okay? That you will feel a pulsation and whatnot. Now this that I'm talking about, the cremastic reflex is conducted by L1, that is ilioinguinal nerve, and the genital branch of the genitofemoral nerve can also conduct it because that has the spinal root of what? Genitofemoral nerve. L1 and L2. So the scrotal sac, part of the scrotal sac there is there. You can see L1 is innervating. And also the medial side of the thigh is also L1 innervation. Okay? And then when you look at the cremastic muscle, what is innervating the cremastic muscle? Cremastic muscle is the continuation of the internal oblique aponeurosis. Internal oblique receives innervation from the ilioinguinal, iliohypogastric, ilio-L1, both L1. So when you scratch, cremastic reflex is this. When you scratch or touch or stroke the medial aspect of the thigh, the person may reflexly, contract, reflex contraction of the cremastic muscle will take place, and then the testes can, ascend, up in through the superficial ring, okay? And so that is the cremastic reflex. But there's a that's part of your physical examination yearly, okay? And so, but there is another very important, thing that is, if you don't like to do that, then you can get someone else to do that. But there's another very important thing I like to associate, and you guys to keep in mind, when you go in the spring quarter, you need to keep in mind that just by simply doing the cremastic reflex, that means the abdominal reflex and the cremastic reflex. That means when you do the L1 cremastic reflex, whether the cremastic muscle contracts or not, you can also test something else. You can test, now this is more serious, okay? You can test any upper and lower motor neuron problems. Upper and lower motor neuron problems, because the neurons in the spinal cord, we will call it the lower motor neurons. And the upper motor neurons, that means, the higher centers of the brain, that means the brain, the cortex or some other parts, upper motor neurons, okay? Now, there's communication between the lower and the upper motor neurons, okay? And so it's the lower motor neurons, that means that is sitting at the level of L1, vertebral level of the vertebral column, that's innervating this part. If, when you do the cremastic reflex, or any of these abdominal reflexes, if they are not responding, if your patient is not responding, that means there is some problem of communication between the upper and the lower motor neurons. Because you will at some point go over this in some other place. That means the reflex arc, how it works. And even though the reflex arc, has its, motor limb, coming to the effector organ, but the information has to also go to the cerebral cortex or the upper motor neurons, okay? And if that is not there, so that can, be seen. And undescended testes is another thing, and I'd like you to look at undescended testes. I'd like you to please study or read. When I say read, you say reading is not good enough. So study from the blue boxes, undescended testes, where it can be found, and what is the clinical significance of that. I expect you to know that, okay? It is in the competencies given. Do you have any questions? No? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, this is a superficial fascia. Yeah. Okay. Okay, yeah, because here,
Where is it?